Hello, West Liberty. This is Joey. You are listening to WGLZ 91.5. We are college radio and we are passionately vocal. With me today in the studio, I have a guest who goes by the name of Dr. Angela Rabine. She is an associate professor of English here at West Liberty University, and I'll be interviewing her for my DMD 204 faculty focus class assignment. Hello, Dr. Rabine, and welcome to WGLZ.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course. So, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's a little chilly today, but hanging in there.
Yeah, it's very chilly on the hilltop. So, I just have a few questions for you, and I'll also try to get to know you a little bit during the process of our interview. So we're gonna have two parts, of course, as I mentioned earlier. I'm going to get started with part A. So the first question that I have for you is, let's start with where you're from and how long you've been teaching for.
Sure. I am actually from southern West Virginia. I'm from a town called Beckley. I grew up in Raleigh County, spent most of my childhood there, and educated in the state of West Virginia at Fairmont State University. Did graduate degrees, one at Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, one at the University of Missouri, where I completed my doctorate in 2011, and I started here at West Liberty in August of that year. So I'm just in the middle, I guess, of my 12th year at West Liberty. Yes, that's right. August of 2011 is when I started.
Wow. I was probably still in high school. Okay, so the second question I have for you is, what are your greatest professional strengths as an associate professor of English?
Oh boy, you're asking me to brag about myself here. I don't know. What are my greatest strengths? Well, I'm extremely organized person, and I think that kind of led me to be applied to be the chair of my department, because it gives me an opportunity to do a lot of planning and collaboration with faculty, and I can kind of put some of those skills to work. So I don't know if that answers your question or not, but that's...
So would you say that you're in charge of the whole English?
So I do. I coordinate the English program. I coordinate our scheduling and course rotation, and sort of help with recruitment, retention, try to build the program, attract new majors. That's a role that I've been in for, this is my fourth year in that role. So I do that in addition to the teaching and other aspects that are still a big part of my job.
Okay, yeah, because last semester I had... I took English 102, and my teacher was Dr. Peter Staffel.
Oh, yes, yeah, Peter. We miss him a lot. He actually retired in May.
Yeah, he told us.
He was a wonderful colleague for a number of years, and really funny, just warm, generous person. We miss him a lot.
He was very funny.
I imagine, yeah. So I teach a lot of the same classes he taught, the composition courses, literature courses, things like that.
But do you teach English 202?
Yes, I do on occasion, not as often as others, but that is part of my rotation as well.
It's in my requirement, so I might take it next semester.
Oh, great, the explorations in literature.
I hope to get you as the teacher.
Okay, we'll see.
Okay, so the third question is, would you consider yourself more of an introvert or an extrovert?
I'm pretty extroverted. I'm a pretty social person. I like to be around people, and I don't know, I kind of ride the line a little bit, I think, because I also really like being alone and reading and writing, but I'm a pretty social person, so I guess we'll go with extrovert.
Extrovert.
You kind of have to be in the classroom.
True. That's what it takes for you to get around campus, to be honest. You just have to be an outgoing person to get to know people and make friends.
Get to know students, get to know colleagues. It really
teachers
helps.
And stuff like that. Yeah. So, could you describe an experience in which you identified the educational needs of your students and successfully developed a way to teach or train them?
Oh, boy. I guess I want to say that that's kind of an ongoing challenge as a professor, especially in a course like you mentioned, English 102. You often have a huge range of abilities in a class like that. Yeah. Some students who have a lot of experience with writing, others who don't. So to me, that's a kind of ongoing challenge, is identifying kind of where students are when they come in the door. I learned pretty quickly in my career that I can't assume too much about what they know and have done before my class. So I really have to, I honestly take the first week of any semester to just kind of get to know the students. I have them do a writing assignment that is really ungraded, just so I can see what their abilities are.
Okay.
And then I can kind of build from there. Sort of, what do they need? How can I respond to their abilities? Yeah. So I guess that's maybe an ongoing project of mine. Yeah, okay. And pretty much every instructor, I'm sure, does some version of, or faces that challenge in some way.
Yeah, that's interesting. To add on to that, I was also going to ask, what is your teaching philosophy?
Oh, you're asking some big questions here. Well, you know, I try to have a very student-centered and inclusive classroom. I really want students to feel like their voices and perspectives are valued and that they matter. I don't like to lecture. I like to have a very conversational, open format type of class. I want to hear from students. You know, I don't think my role is to just deposit knowledge into their brains. I think that's something we should learn. We should learn together, and I can learn along with them. So that's my general approach to most of my classes.
Okay, that's good. That's good. So the fifth question is, do you see yourself working elsewhere as an associate professor of English other than just teaching about it?
Like, you mean going into two different university or something of that nature?
Like,
or
using, not teaching, but like doing something else with...
The short answer is no. Yeah, I love my job. I really enjoy working with students, and I feel like the higher ed is the... I guess my calling. So I don't see myself leaving the professorship. Not right now. Ask me again in 10 years. But right now, I'm pretty content with where I am.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Yeah. So that concludes the part A. We're going to take a quick short break, and then we'll be back with more.
You are listening to 91.5 WGLZ FM, the Hilltop's top station, West Liberty, West Virginia. We are college radio. We are passionately vocal.
Okay. We're back on WGLZ 91.5. And today in the studio, we have West Liberty's Associate Professor of English, Dr. Rabine. Hello again.
Hi.
Okay, so we're back with the program. So the question I have for you is, what would you say your biggest achievement is?
Oh, boy, my biggest achievement. I mean, professionally, I just want to say finishing graduate school, finishing my doctorate. I mean, that took a lot of work, and I had to put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into that that program. So, you know, professionally, it would be that. Yeah, I think that's how I'd answer that question.
I cannot wait to graduate and just get done with school and just get started on in life, you know?
I do understand that, although I loved learning. I loved being a student, which is kind of why I went back for a master's degree and a PhD, because I really thrived in the I really thrived as a student. I loved being a student.
Yeah, that's good. And something that's kind of like pushing me to want to graduate more is that my girlfriend, she graduated from dental hygiene last year, and like this month she already started working. Like, it's serious. She's working 12-hour shift in a dental hygiene office, and it's just so and I'm like, you just graduated and you're working like, is this how it's going to be for everybody?
See, that's why you shouldn't be in a hurry to graduate, in my opinion. Enjoy college while you can, because there's you have a lot of adulthood ahead of you,
a lot of
working years ahead of you.
And she's only
22.
College,
just enjoy it.
And she's already working, like, 12-hour shift.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it's just too
That's
much.
Serious.
It is. Okay, so the other question I have for you is, what are some of your favorite classic works of literature?
Oh, there's so many. That's a great question. I just taught a novel this week that is one of my favorites. It's by an Indian writer named Arundhati Roy. And the novel's called The God of Small Things. It kind of looks at the caste system in India and how it has in many ways been a oppressive and destructive force for a lot of people. And it's a really kind of tragic story of a family that's kind of torn apart because of that caste system. But it also manages to be really kind of beautiful and hopeful at the same time. So I love that novel. I actually can hardly teach it without wanting to cry in class. I know that sounds silly, but when we look at certain passages of it, I just find it so moving that I just have to remember, I'm standing in front of a room full of people. Let me try to keep myself together here.
In high school, we read a novel. It was called The Life of Pi.
Oh, I've never read that, but that's who wrote? That's an Indian novel,
it's
right?
An Indian novel.
I forget the author's name, but I think it was made into a movie too, wasn't it?
Yes, there was a movie about it. It was very interesting. It was a very interesting book to read and a movie to watch.
Yeah, I really like world literature, actually. I mean, I not just English. You know, British. I love teaching world literature, so that's one novel that I especially enjoy.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So as I mentioned, I read your bio and it stated that your research focuses on British women writers of the Romantic period. What does that exactly mean, if you don't mind getting
That's a great question, yeah. So that's looking at writers from Great Britain between the years of roughly 1790s through the 1830s. And that was a period where there was a lot of social change in Great Britain. There was the movement for abolition at the time, the movement for women's rights. Yeah. The French Revolution was taking place at that time, yeah. which actually caused a lot of... there was a lot of fear of the revolution happening in England when the French Revolution took place. There was this fear that, you know, people in England were going to start rising up against the government. So there was a lot of social turmoil, I guess, at that period. So it's a really interesting period historically. And a lot of women writers who've kind of been forgotten, you know, they were very well regarded, published widely during their time period. Many of them writing in response to social issues. A lot of writers wrote about the French Revolution, or they wrote about, you know, gender movements for greater equality in society in a lot of ways. Yeah. But they've kind of been left behind by literary criticism. So I like to work on writers who are a little lesser known now, even if they were perhaps well known in their time. Yeah. And I like looking at their kind of politics and how they think about social issues and problems. So. So that is kind of the main focus of my research. And a writer that a lot of people know the name, at least, from that period is Jane Austen. Are you familiar with Jane Austen? Folks who study literature, you know, Pride and Prejudice is one of the more famous novels from the period. And so I look at kind of her lesser-known contemporaries.
So I did some research myself, too, and there was a name I looked into. It seemed interesting. Charlotte Smith or Charlotte?
Yeah, Tanner. The writer Charlotte Smith.
Yeah, who
that's
was
right.
an English novelist and a poet.
That's right.
So, have you explained or have you used some of her novels?
You know, that's
for your research?
Honestly not one of the writers that I've worked on, but she was definitely one of the writers exactly in the time period that I'm talking about. So. Jane West is an author that I've been working on recently. Yeah, actually, my next article coming out is on her.
Okay.
One of her works of literature. She was one of the writers who took a more politically conservative stance at the time and was very anti-revolution. And she thought women should have a very specific role just in the home. So I published I have an article coming out on her. So one of the, yeah.
That's good.
I try to find time for scholarship. It's kind of tough with teaching and other things, but.
So I'll definitely make sure to look into
it. Oh, that's kind of you.
I also read that your secondary research interests include the post-colonial literature and women and gender studies. What's that really about? What do you hope you learn or achieve throughout this research?
Yeah, so post-colonial literature, actually the novel I mentioned a little while ago, The God of Small Things, is considered post-colonial. And so it's a body of scholarship looking at writers in parts of the world who were colonized by Europe and kind of looking at how those writers responded to that experience and challenged that experience and kind of the power dynamics of colonialism and imperialism. Okay. So, and I guess I like to study that because, you know, in a kind of idealistic sense, I think it's important to think about how literature and other things can be tools for achieving greater equality and cultural awareness. You know, we have to learn from the past so that we don't repeat it. And I think literature is one way we do that.
Yes.
So that's kind of, in essence, that body of scholarship is looking at the kind of legacy of European empire and how that plays out in literature. And so, again, I have a kind of specific interest in women and gender, and I guess that is another important thing to me to kind of bring greater awareness to people about issues related to gender equality. I'm actually teaching a course on feminism in fiction right now.
Really?
Yeah, so we're kind of looking at how American writers over time have dealt with different feminist themes and ideas in their works.
Okay, so does your research look into experiences such as slavery, immigration, suppression, and resistance? And is it all based on European history or just in general?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So, yeah, a lot of my research looks at how those kinds of topics appear in the Romantic period, right? So writers like Charlotte Smith, who you mentioned, or others, a lot of British women wrote in support of abolition, right, and supporting the ending of slavery in Britain, and a lot of them wrote about those very topics. So, yes, much of what you just described is involved in that period.
Okay, where the British women writers, were they suppressed back in those times, or were they did people not really take them serious as writers because they were women?
A lot of them did not. You're correct. Yeah. There was a very vocal critique of women just for publishing at all, because that was seen as putting your voice forward in the public sphere where you didn't belong, right? So the very act of publishing something was offensive to some, because they saw that as women stepping into a man's sphere, essentially. So not everyone, you know, there were some who were supportive of that. But yeah, in large part, publishing was kind of scandalous. Being a writer could be seen as scandalous and not ladylike, especially if you were a woman writing about a political topic. That was seen as not ladylike, right?
So they would be suppressed.
Exactly. Okay. So there's a lot of really interesting, that kind of connects back to my interest in gender and feminism, kind of how women writers negotiated all those different, I guess, demands on them, at that time.
Okay, so to drift off from this topic, I'm going to try to get to know you now. So what are your interests outside of school when you're not working, when you're not worried about, you know, your researches, when you're not worried about literature? What do you do outside of school?
Great question. So I often joke that running is my second job, because I am a runner and I love running. It's a huge part of my life. Okay. I started running on a regular basis a little over 10 years ago, and it's just it's kind of my happy place. I run almost every day, and I like to train for races, and I actually just ran a marathon a week ago.
Really?
So
how did that go?
Not great. It was a really hot day, and I don't do very well in the heat, it was a little disappointing. The training went really well. The race didn't go so well, but there's always another race. You can always try again. So
besides running, is there other stuff you do?
Yeah, I enjoy sewing. My mother growing up sewed a lot of things for me. She would make clothes. She made stuff for our house. And when I was younger, I was too stubborn to learn. I just thought, kind of goes back to this whole feminism thing. I don't want to learn sewing. But the older I've gotten, the more I realize it's a lot of fun and it's a good creative outlet. So I enjoy making projects just for fun to use around my house. Yeah.
I know your husband is a big fan of cats. He loves cats. So, like, do you guys have any other pets besides cats?
Oh, no. We're both just two cat-obsessed people. I think that's so funny that you know that about him. Because if you came by my office, you would see all my crazy cat lady decorations.
Really?
Yeah.
On his door, he has lots of cat pictures, too. So how many cats do you guys have?
We have two currently. Okay. Since we've been together, we had, at various times, three cats, although different overlapping cats. A couple of them died a few years back, and we have one that we adopted a while ago. So we're big cat lovers, that's so funny you knew that about
him. That's pretty sweet. So, like, music-wise, are there any bands or favorite artists that you currently like, or that you just like in general, that you don't ever, like, go a day without listening to?
This is maybe an embarrassing thing to admit for a woman in her 40s. I'm a huge fan of Harry Styles.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
As a solo artist, I love his most recent album. I've been playing it pretty heavily since it came out. Wow. And I'm also a big Taylor Swift fan.
She just released an album.
Midnights. It's incredible. I love it. I was not one of the people who tried to buy tickets to her tour, which turned out to be a giant disaster, and they're way too expensive, and I'm not spending $11,000 on a ticket.
And some of them were like $95,000.
It's unbelievable.
For a ticket?
On StubHub, I know. It's insane. I kind of thought, you know what, maybe if it's not too expensive, but there's just no way.
If it was like something like $200, $300, of course everyone would go.
I would.
But $11,000?
I know, it's insane.
It's really crazy.
It's insane. But I would love to see her live. I think she's an incredible songwriter.
Have you been to any concerts other than hers or like any other artist?
So I did go to a Harry Styles show in 2021. I went to his show in Pittsburgh at PPG Paints. And it was really fun. And I actually got tickets 3 days before the show. I didn't think I was going to get any, but I managed to find someone who was selling some. So.
Oh, wow. That's really cool.
It was great. But that's the last time I went to a concert, and I hadn't been to one for several years before that. So I went to a lot of shows in college, but as I've gotten older, I just go less and less, I guess.
So, sports. Are you a fan of sports?
Yeah, so this is a side effect of getting married to my husband is that I've become a Philadelphia Phillies fan and a fan of Wheeling Nailers hockey. So we go to a lot of hockey games downtown.
I would like to go to a hockey
game. If you get a chance while you're still here, go check out the Wheeling Nailers.
I will definitely.
It's a lot more affordable than a Penguins game, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, because I'm currently applying to become an RA, and during my mock duty night, the person I was with, he put on hockey, and and there was this moment in the hockey game where they stopped the game and they let the players fight, and I was like,
I know,
and I was like, what?
I had the same reaction.
Is that a thing?
Like, why are they just letting this happen? Why is no one stopping this? And he's like, well, that's just hockey. It's like the one sport where they kind of let you fight. It's crazy. I agree completely. I was shocked.
I was shocked too. I was like, what is happening?
What are they doing?
Because
I don't think they allow you to fight when you play soccer, do they? Not a thing.
You would get taken out of the field.
Yeah.
You get a red card.
It's so bizarre, but it's one of those things that's still stuck around from the sport in the earlier days. I mean, if you watch older footage, they're not even wearing helmets.
They don't wear helmets.
It's terrifying.
It's really.
I get nervous just watching old videos. I'm just waiting for someone's head to get smashed into the glass.
That's terrible.
But hockey's fun.
It is fun. But that concludes our interview. Thank you so much for coming in, Dr. Rabine. Well, everyone, you heard it here as I was just talking to our guest, Dr. Rabine, and we got to learn a lot of interesting stuff about her and her profession and her researches. This has been Joey here on WGLZ 91.5. We are college radio and we are passionately vocal.